Hello, everyone. This is David Hayward, the Naked Pastor, with the Lasting Supper podcast. Today, I'm talking with Rhonna Dietrich, a member of the Lasting Supper. Hello, Rhonna. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to hear your voice.
Yours as well.
Yeah. So I want to make sure I've got this right. It's Rhonna.
Yes, it is.
Yes, not Rhonna.
My mom always used to say, just like Donna, but with an R.
Well, there you go. That's right. How are you doing today?
I am pretty good, actually. Just came from a hair appointment, so that's always nice to have someone take care of me for a couple of hours. And yeah, pretty easy day.
Awesome. Awesome. What's new in your life? I just want to, I'll just start right off the bat. I'm so glad you're a part of the Lasting Supper and I love your presence there. And I was looking over your website today.
Yes.
You know, just sort of prepare for our talk and everything. And you're on fire. Aren't you? Am I wrong?
Aren't you? I certainly hope so. I mean, the flame vacillates, you know, it's a modulating flame, I suppose. But yeah, I'm making some headway, I think. I would love to see a bigger platform, more money, faster growth, you know, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
But I do think that I'm getting closer and closer to hitting my stride in terms of what I'm trying to say and feeling more freedom in that regard.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Like how are things going with your site and your tell everybody what you do.
So, I was listening to Ren just this morning and was listening to her talk about what her day/night job was and then what else she did. And so I'm never quite sure how to answer the question. Do I talk about what I actually get paid for or do I talk about what I want to get paid for?
Well, take 5 seconds to tell us what you're getting paid for.
I do get paid for spending a whole bunch of time with men in the military. Every once in a while, a few women. But I
maybe
offer
you
them...
should take a little longer and clarify that.
I know. I work with them. I'm a facilitator and a trainer, and I spend time with them helping them transition from the military into the civilian world from a career development standpoint.
Very important job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you do that you're passionate about?
What I do that I'm passionate about, I write and I talk as much as I possibly can and that other people can stand about the biblical narratives of women in ways that I hope are redemptive and powerful and transformative.
Okay. And yeah, your blog, RhonnaDietrich.com, is all about that, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And you also gave a TED Talk.
I did, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. It's awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
And how did you feel you did?
Oh, I loved every second of it. I speak a lot. I mean, my job has me speaking all the time, and I'm really pretty comfortable in public speaking contexts, but I was so nervous about this. And really, up until about 10 minutes before I went on stage, was intending to use my notes because I just didn't think I could keep it together.
Yeah.
And then finally, at the last minute, I thought, you know what, Rhonna, you either know this or you don't. Mm-hmm. And you do. Like, it comes out of my pores, practically, that subject matter. So I didn't take the notes up. I felt like I was just right there the whole time. Like, I still, when I watch it, I still tear up. Like, it was really powerful for me to be able to say what I wanted to say out loud in front of an audience. It was really a great experience. I was super grateful.
Like you say, when it's coming out of your pores, meaning that it's so integrated and sewn into the fabric of who you are, and you're passionate about it. I mean, it just shows. So do you get out to speak much, or do you find that a little bit frustrating right now?
I don't know if I'd use the word frustrating. I mean, I would love to have more opportunity to speak. It is... it's hard to find, at least from my perspective, hard to find the right venue. I'm a little too, if not significantly too, controversial in the church world. and I'm too spiritual for the secular world for the most part.
Welcome to my life.
I bet, yeah. And I don't really believe that either of those things are true, but, you know, stereotypes abound and fear abounds and safety abounds.
Yeah.
And so that makes it tough. I did just recently get offered a gig at a church in Nebraska, of all places. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going. I'm going to preach. I'm going to do an all-day women's event, and then I'm speaking to the men and the women on Friday night, and then Sunday I'll preach. So I'm thrilled about that opportunity. So, you know, every once in a while, some things come along where people resonate quickly, understand what I'm talking about, and want more.
Yeah.
But more of it's an uphill battle, to be sure.
So why do you feel, why don't you share this with us a bit? Because I think this gets close to the nerve of why a lot of people say follow the Naked Pastor or the blog, that is. And people are joining the Lasting Supper, where you say you're just, you know, you're spiritual, but you're considered controversial. You can't find a home, let's say, in the church. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well,
why do you think it's controversial?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not preaching. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here. Obviously, the church. I mean, there's always exceptions to this, and I have known really amazing communities of people that have much different feelings than this or experiences than this. But by and large, the church, regardless of the denomination, has its own set of beliefs that are pretty boundaried. And when we step outside of those, we become controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of bandwidth for people who believe differently than the church in the context of the church.
Right.
Now, again, there's always exceptions, and I have been in pretty liberal denominational contexts, so it's not as though people think of me as a heretic by any stretch.
Right.
And I don't think I am a heretic, but there are many who would say that. I mean, I've lost big opportunities with lots of money attached to mm-hmm. speak because I wouldn't agree to the statement of faith.
Right.
So it is just such a curiosity to me. I mean,
right.
I look at the church and I think to myself, do you have people like standing in line trying to get in? Are you like trying to pull up folding chairs because you're so packed? You mm-hmm. you don't have room for one more person.
Right.
Like, don't you want to like step into a more engaged,
yeah.
open conversation that doesn't have to be scary? It's just
right.
a conversation. But it's hard.
Yeah, but you're trying to change minds as well, right?
Of course.
Yeah, with the women's equality issues and giving a women's perspective on a lot of the stories, even about women in the Bible. So
of course.
And so
yeah.
you are paddling against the stream,
which is counter. Just doesn't even make sense to me either. I mean, I know that to be true,
right?
And it just does not make sense. I mean, when you just say out loud, wouldn't you want to advocate for the stories of women in scripture and the ways in which those can strengthen and advocate on behalf of women in the
mm-hmm.
world today?
Mm-hmm.
Most of us would go, of course.
Yeah.
I would think, like sane thinking people. And yet that once I kind of get down in the weeds with it, then it becomes problematic and controversial and scary, I think,
mm-hmm.
to people.
Mm-hmm. You know, I read your about page there. I like your website, by the way. It's very colorful and fresh looking, and you got a lot of good information there. And I was just looking at your confessions and beliefs. I just want to share them with our audience today. I confess that I'm ravenous for smart, sophisticated conversations about women, faith, and God that don't cause my skin to crawl or my claws to come out or my defenses to go up. These are hard to find. I confess my on-again, off-again frustration with organized religion, the lack of accessible, provocative, and engaging woman-focused theology, and the ways in which women's stories, particularly those in Scripture, have too often been misinterpreted and misaligned, thus causing us to feel the same. I believe that when women's stories change, everything changes. Philosophies, religions, systems, structures, beliefs, politics, leadership, homes, children, commerce, planetary alignment, whole worlds, women's stories matter. I believe that the world is praying for a deeper, richer wisdom. I believe this prayer is answered through women's incarnate brilliance and beauty. I confess and believe that God shows up when I write and speak about these things. I love that.
Me too. Now that you read it out loud, I'm like, wow, how awesome is that?
No, that's passionate and it's very convincing. And I agree with you. I think that the whole message of the Bible and the stories and church life needs what you're talking about.
Thank you.
And so you're trying to do this through your blog, trying to open up this conversation about women. And how do you find discussions on your blog? Do you get a lot of people who are in agreement with you, or people that are challenging what you're trying to do?
I don't very often get much challenge, primarily because I think those people unsubscribe pretty quickly, or they click away, even faster than that. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, I'll have someone more on Facebook than on my site itself kind of take me on with mm-hmm. some things, and I just don't even take the bait. It isn't worth the argument because we're sitting in completely different spaces and it just isn't going to happen.
Right.
And I've learned not to bite at those things. But more times than not, and I will say, I mean, I think this is a trend that at least I'm experiencing online. And I've been blogging for almost 8 years now. It used to be that I had way more engagement on the blog itself, and now I'm seeing it either on Facebook or email directly to me.
I don't
have nearly the same level of comment and dialogue taking place on the site, but the emails that I receive, I'm almost in tears every single time I get one. I just am so astounded over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. First, just by the fact that my words matter, that I have impact, that women and men too, just are grateful for what I'm saying. And that's just a really humbling place to be.
Right.
And secondly, because I kind of live, breathe, eat this stuff, I probably take it for granted a little bit. And so when I hear someone else respond and I hear bits and pieces of their story and I recognize how much it means to them, it just, I don't think this is a word, but it recompels me. It reminds me that this stuff matters.
Yeah.
And there's so many people out there who I can't always find, but when I do, or when they find me, I'm like, okay, where are more of you? You're my people.
Yeah. So then I want to ask you, you used to be in the church pretty thick, weren't you? Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that has changed?
Yeah, you can say that. Okay, so I grew up in the church, grew up Presbyterian, went to church every Sunday, played the piano, for the choir, everything that you can possibly do in the church. Went to a Presbyterian college, went to Whitworth in Spokane, Washington, and then, went through my 20s where I wasn't doing much of anything other than feeling guilty. I'll just cut to the chase. I married an army chaplain so I was a pastor's wife. We were active duty for the last 3 years of his 22-year career. Or I was at the end of his career. He was active duty longer than that. And then he stepped into a church. So I was a pastor's wife of a United Methodist church for 15 years. So yeah, you could say I was in the thick of it.
Wow. Pastor's wife.
Yeah.
Wow.
So sitting on the front row every single Sunday, walking out on his arm after the sermon, standing in the foyer, greeting everybody, leading Bible studies, hosting luncheons, all the things that a pastor's wife is, mm-hmm. I was going to say want to do, but that would not be true.
Expected to do. Yeah.
Yes, of course.
And then what happened?
And then I ended the marriage. That was not like a quick decision. That was a long, long, long process. But after 15 years, ended it. And up until about a month ago, haven't been back to church since. So that was 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a huge life change.
And it was. Yeah, it the church was the least of the changes, obviously, ending the marriage and being a single mom and trying to figure out who I am as a single person. Those were the big changes, obviously. The church felt like just something over on the side. Yeah, a major lifestyle change to be sure. And I've thought, I mean, I know you had that hangout recently talking about, relationships that had ended because of theological differences, et cetera. And I've been thinking a lot about that, both in terms of ending my marriage and other experiences that I've had. And we'd like to think that these things are disparate, right? That our lifestyle choices or our beliefs don't have to talk to one another. But of course they do. They're all integrated. They're all twisted together. And in a perfect world, they would flow nicely and easily and beautifully without conflict, but it is not so.
So, should we feel sorry for you?
No, I thought that, I think that's such a great question. I was listening to that with friends this morning. No, absolutely not. I feel great. Most of the time,
Yeah,
I
that's
don't.
normal.
Yeah, I don't ever feel like poor me, like I'm adrift, I'm lost. I don't know. I left. It isn't as though, that I was kicked out. I made the choice to go, and I know of many people whose experience has been much different than mine, where they have felt as though they were kind of forced out the door. And that is a much different process of grieving. That's a much different kind of loss than mine, which was very intentional and that I felt really solid about from that point forward. I've never questioned it.
Well, can I ask you why you left the church? Can you nail it down to one or two reasons why you left the church if you didn't feel forced
Reason,
out?
yeah, the first reason was because I left my marriage, and because I had been married to the pastor, those two kind of went hand in hand, and it was very easy to not go then. I mean, I had to go previous to that. There was really no plan B, and so to have the freedom to choose to not go felt like just gift and grace to me after, a lifetime of being there. So that was the first reason. It just was propelled by life choices. The second reason, though, was it's almost like, when you know too much, it's impossible to go backwards. Like sometimes you wish you could unknow things, back to a simpler day, a simpler time. And I can't unknow things. So when I go to, like just a couple of weeks ago, I went to church for the second time in many years, and I sat there at a much better place than I have been in the past, but I can't not sift what I hear through the lens of what I understand. And I'm at a place where I can allow that now, where that isn't nearly so dissonant for me, because I've had a lot of years to work on that and craft my theology and really think well about what it is that I believe and don't, and what I am willing to embrace and not. But it's still hard, because I can't just walk in the doors of a place and immediately embrace and be immersed in an experience without having my brain running, processing, sifting and sorting. And that becomes tiring. And so for many years, I've just chosen to not have to bother with it.
I totally get what you mean. I visited a church a while ago, and I could hear all the very subtle manipulative language coming through the message, the sermon. And it wasn't intentional. There was nothing mean or outright about it or cruel, but just I could just hear that there was so much fear and concern and, insecurity about the church and the life of the church and its future, and trying to get control people to give and to support and to work and to get more people in. I just couldn't handle it. It was I left there in a sweat pretty near, it was incredible. So what do you do for your spirituality now?
Well, I write all the time, and that is probably the primary place in which I continue to work out what it is that I believe and how to hold on to some semblance of faith when, frankly, it would be easier, I think, in many ways to let it all go. that is the space for me. And there is much that I don't publish that I really wrestle with. Like I write everyday stuff that I'm trying to work out for myself that is really hard and really twisty and deeply embedded in my DNA, whether I want it to be or not. So that's meaningful for me. I need that practice. I would think this, I think that the second place for me where my spirituality continues to be, enhanced and developed and, integrated is on in an online community. I just have been so grateful for an online space, certainly for the platform I've been able to create through my own site and the conversations that that has then afforded me, just amazing people that I have gotten to know that I get to continue to engage with. Mm-hmm. And then a third place would just be personal relationships, just amazing people in my physical world, not just my online world, but my physical world that are just brilliant and stunningly beautiful. And, I get to just hang out with them and I love that.
Yeah, that's cool. Anything you'd like to say to members of the Lasting Supper or to our general audience? Anything you'd like to add?
Oh, I would just love to say, I mean, I wish I were on the site more often, and I keep, it's in the queue of my brain almost all the time to be able to be there and engage more. And I just really am so, I'm so grateful for what you have stepped into, David. I know that it takes an incredible amount of faith on your part to create the community in the first place and to continue to host it. And I just think it's so valuable, so needed, and so representative of what I think all of us long for in the context of a community of faith, right? Mm-hmm. We want to be heard. We want to be acknowledged. We want to be seen. Yep. We want our rage as well as our sorrow and our joy and our celebration all to be allowed, our questions, our doubts, all those things. Yep. And you're doing that in a really, really beautiful, powerful way.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's great there. I'm loving it, enjoying it. It's really filling a need for me for sure. And I love what you're doing. I think it's so important. As you know, I think we got in touch a while ago. I was doing my Sophia series, a Journey of the Woman, and her coming to her own spiritual independence. And then we met. I talked with you when I first started the Lasting Supper, I think, to ask for advice and things like that. So we have a long history together, and I'm looking forward to a lot more time together. I think what you're doing is really awesome. I think it's important. I think it's necessary, and I hope more and more people listen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Rana, thanks so much for talking with me today.
My privilege and pleasure, David. Thank you.
Okay. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Good. Take care.
Okay. See ya.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
That was Rana Dietrich, a member of the Lasting Supper. You can check out her website, RonnaDietrich.com. Awesome. Thank you so much, Rana. And I look forward to talking to you guys again. See you again in the near future. This is David Hayward, your Naked Pastor, with the Lasting Supper Podcast.